Death of a Salesman, first produced in 1949, has some unexpected parallels with Blood Wedding. It too is about a tragedy among unheroic people, and Miller himself described it as a lyric. So there's poetry there too. But the culture of the American will to succeed could not be more different from the centuries-old Spanish moral code. The first production of Death of a Salesman hit Broadway in 1949 when it was described by one observer as a time bomb under American capitalism and ran for years. The play follows Willie Loman, a Brooklyn salesman in his 60s, through the last painful 24 hours of his life, into which swirl memories of earlier times. Everyone likes Willie, but he's aging, losing his job and his hold on reality. He's financially hard-pressed and failing to cope with family tensions. His wife, Linda, remains loyal, but his older son, Happy, is a wastrel, and the younger, Biff, has lost his way since, as a teenager, he caught his father out in an affair. The revival, directed by Robert Falls, which has just arrived from New York at the Lyric in Shaftesbury Avenue, has been long awaited. The American actor Brian Dennehy won a Tony for his performance as Willie on Broadway. Here he's supported by a mixed British and American cast, with Claire Higgins as Linda, Douglas Henshall as Biff, Mark Baisley as Happy, and Howard Witt from the Broadway cast as Willie's neighbour, Charlie. But Robert Falls has said that the most previous American productions have followed the original, using the same kind of set, so, in quotes, the play badly needed dusting off. Is this dusting off a success? Charlie?
Yes, it's terrific. I've always had a bit of a blank spot about Arthur Miller, who I think can be very preachy and rather pleased with himself, I always think, as a dramatist. And, it's often been said that The Crucible is a fundamentally dishonest play because, while there weren't any witches in Salem, there actually were communists in the America he was writing about at the time. And I think he's always got an axe to grind, and the plays editorialise a great deal. But this play, this production absolutely blew me away. It's incredibly powerful. It's very long. It was an absolute nightmare to review on the night. The overnight critics were looking frantic as we rushed out of the theatre at 10:30. But you didn't grudge a minute of it, really. I was absolutely swept away about it. Brian Dennehy, I'd always thought of Willie Loman, having seen people like Warren Mitchell and Dustin Hoffman do it, as a rather weaselly little man, you know. And Dennehy is a gigantic man in sort of personality and in corporally. And watching this great man bite the dust like a sort of great wounded bear is absolutely magnificent, and it's fantastically well acted. Claire Higgins, yet again the critic's favourite, is wonderful as Linda, and she even makes sense of an absolutely typical Miller line, which I always felt in the past was undoable, where she says famously, attention must be paid to such a man. It's impossible, I think, in real life to imagine a wife using that rhetorical double attention, or indeed referring to her husband and the father of her children as such a man. That is very much an actor making his playwright making his editorial point. But she pulled even that off, and you really believed in her. Her pain and her unconditional love for this rumpled, defeated man was fantastic, and all the supporting performances rang true and moving. It was a really great night of theatre. I'd always thought that actually this is a second-rate play whose reputation was hugely exaggerated, but not a bit of it. I finally felt I'd seen the point of Arthur Miller with this production.
Yes. Well, I think Miller thought of it as a role for a small person in the first place, didn't he? But the first one to play it was Lee J. Cobb, who got used to big ones as well. Yes. David?
I had entirely the reverse experience, Charlie. I also think that this is not the great play that it is taken to be. It won the Pulitzer in 1949. It's regularly cited, and when Miller sadly died earlier this year, everybody said, this is the great play. I really don't think it is. I think The Crucible is far and away a greater piece of writing. Even in a weak production, there is something about The Crucible that absolutely, maybe it just speaks to me, but I think it's a fantastic piece of writing, and this just doesn't seem to me to have the weight, and it has all of Miller's flaws, his, as Charlie says, his portentousness, his deep and abiding humorlessness, his rabbinical tone, I say that as a nice Jewish boy. So this production seemed to me according to all the reviews that had come out of America of it, to blow all that away, and all it did for me was to absolutely underline and reinstate them. I found Dennehy miscast. I wasn't moved for a nanosecond, even though I've not liked the play much in the past. I'd seen a previous production at the National with Alan Armstrong, not terribly well, directed by David Thacker, and even though that was very problematic, that production was overly symbolic with a sawn off tree in the middle of the set. That still moved me, and one of the formative experiences of my theatre going life was seeing Warren Mitchell in the play at the National. But this just absolutely left me stony cold. I thought Claire Higgins was wonderful. And although Dougie Henschel, I thought, was pretty much flying over the top, he had to, because Robert Falls had pushed all the other scenes so far that that was all that was left for him to do. If he needed to top Dennehy, that's as far as he had to go. I thought the set was trying to be elusive and to flow like a dream, and actually it creaked and groaned and took forever to change, so we had to have over-emotive music flying around telling us what was going on in the play if we happened to have fallen asleep. No, didn't do a thing for me.
Jane?
I think this play has its, certainly has its weaknesses. There are moments that exasperate me. There, for instance, when we see Willie Loman and he refers to the stockings that he gives his mistress, and there is his wife carefully mending her own stockings because there isn't enough money to go around, and you just wish that he could wait a couple of scenes, you know, that he didn't have to do the two simultaneously and underline it, which he is certainly prone to do. And I always think of this play that you kind of live through the first act, but then there is this incredible emotional impact of the second, and I certainly felt that this production, for all that it did sort of clunk itself around the stage occasionally, but that it was very, very powerful at the end. And I do think that Brian Dennehy was a huge performance. I think he gave that feeling constantly. You felt that he was on the brink of realising just what his life amounted to, and just when you thought that he got there and he understood, he would sort of, that awful smile, toothy smile, which was so empty, he would suddenly flash it, and you'd know he was kind of burying himself in his dreams again. And I love the way that the play, and which I felt with him as well, that, because, I mean, he sold himself for popularity, for this potential of earning money. Of course, he's failed on every account. And yet, there's all these mentions of the fact that he's built the porch and he's improved this house so massively. And you think of Miller being such a good carpenter himself, we're told, that there is another possibility of another life there, and he just doesn't see it. And I do find that very heartbreaking. Mm.
I think you're right that his self-delusion would... is really, really evident in Dennehy's performance, and whilst I've just delivered a broadside against him, and I do think he's miscast, I think he captures that quality like no one I've ever seen do, and that really does something to the play. But for me, I just thought, this now looks like the tragedy of what happens when you get old, which is really touching and moving. It's just not happened to be what Miller wrote. When he goes to see Howard, the man much younger than him, who's his boss, in order to beg that his job be kind of released and he can work, he doesn't have to travel anymore. You sit there going, no one in their right minds is going to employ him. He's clearly way too old. And I know that there is an element in that scene where you go, no, he is deluding himself, there's no way. But actually, it just seemed to me to be beyond comprehension.
And there's
a shambling...
It's fine, the point that that Miller, I mean, is just showing that what Miller was criticising of America is now true in our country as well. Yes. I mean, it doesn't have to be like that, does it? People don't have to be put on the shelf and thrown away.
Well, we're not going to be anymore. It's going to be the exact opposite, isn't it? We're going to be slaving on till we're 90 now.
He looks so exhausted and worn out and incapable of doing that job. It's not that, oh, well, you know, you're 60, whatever he's supposed to be, 63, I believe, and Dennehy's 67. It's not that, oh, well, you're past it, so in terms of age, so get out, even though you've got some life in you. Dennehy sort of seems to be... He He's such a large man, he's desperate to show that this character is not as healthy as he is. So there's somehow kind of shambling pace to him.
But there's meant to be more to it. I mean, Miller has actually said that productions of The Salesman shouldn't be about pathology. And it can happen if you play Willie like a really mad fellow. It's meant to have a social and moral dimension and to be a lot more than about this one man. And we've talked a lot, you've talked a lot about the performance of this particular person, but did you get the sense of the rest of America being criticised?
Well, I think that's the dreary side of the play, to be honest. I mean, I think Arthur Miller very much wanted to, you know, to talk the play up and to say that this was a, but actually, plays don't really work like that. Plays work if you really believe in the characters. I think you can take that moral away about the sort of dark side of the American dream and the futility of his hopes. And I think, but I think to see it as a criticism of America, you know, per se, is I think Miller is not untypically overstating his claim to greatness there. I think where this tragedy works is as a family drama, and that is what I think this production does so well.
Yes, but we have to assume that when it played in China in the time of communism, that the politics didn't
exactly.
But it must have been the fathers and sons.
I think it's the fathers and sons, and the story of getting old, and also that. And you mentioned that smile, and what's quite fascinating about it, isn't it? For quite a lot of the play, because he's so good at fooling himself, he is actually happy. As soon as he can, that's what I thought. Denny got so heartbreakingly that and actually that smile, which was toothy, but it was also genuine, because when he forgot about what was actually going on in his life and was going living in those memories of the past, and even the memories were false a lot of the time, he could kid himself that he was happy still, and that's what broke my heart.
Yes, but having said that, Miller also
says don't take any notice of Miller.
No, I thought it was very interesting that it's that he saw it as a long poem by Willie, and in fact at one stage he called it the inside of his head. I mean,
well, that's very much the way
he can't. Miller can't have it both ways. It's either the inside of his head or it's a political allegory, but he can't have both.
Well, the odd thing about the play is that it is the inside of Miller's head to a degree, but there's also a level of denial. This is one of the most Jewish plays ever written. Mm. Not that any of the characters are ostensibly indeed literally Jewish.
No.
It's absolutely about the
Jewish. He does mention somewhere that they are a Jewish family, but
it's a play about assimilation. Mm. All he wants to do is be liked. Uh-huh. Mm. He wants to be liked. He wants to be fit in. He doesn't want to stand out. It absolutely reflects the Jewish experience. And this production is kind of like all those revisionist productions by avowedly heterosexual directors that go, we're going to show you what Tennessee Williams plays are all about. So they de-gay them in order to make them universal. And there is something here. I don't think that that's anybody's intention, but I just think it sort of hasn't been noticed, and that element is missing from the mix.
Well, I don't know that I agree about that, because the neighbour, I felt, was a very strong sort of Jewish character.
Antithetically to the Lomans.
No, because I think you felt that there was that strong connection, because you wondered why it extended beyond the family, because they weren't family, you kind of realised that. No, I thought that was good.
Except actually, the two sons don't seem Jewish at all, do they? They're American jocks, aren't they? Really?
That's about not appearing to be Jewish at all costs.
Yes.
I did think it was very clear in this production that with Happy, just how nobody takes any notice of him, and that he is such a complete nonentity. Entity that you can see why he would persevere.
Yes. He's not a nice man, though.
He's not a nice man at all. But you can see where his problems came.
You wonder which came first. You know, the family realises an absolute shit, or he became a shit because the family thought he was one.
Absolutely.
The mystery of families. Thank you very much, Charlie and David and Jane.